afternoon and welcome to the Love Bite.
Good afternoon.
How is everybody today?
I'm fucking sleepy.
Maybe you should quit staying out all night, you know, crazy person.
Yeah. And then like, you know, yeah, taking off underwear and, you know, asking you to stuff it in my purse and then feeling you touch me in my special places.
Well,
you should totally stop doing that.
Right.
No, not ever, please.
Am I on the right show?
we went out last night and it's, you know, stuff happened. Stuff happened because that's what happens sometimes. We have Miss D back in studio.
Hooray.
And we love her as a person. We see her as often as we can. And we brought her in specifically to put on her, you know, former marriage and family therapy hat to talk about the psychology of BDSM, the psychology of all of those components, dominance, submission, sadism, masochism. We've done our own version of just from a completely non-professional point of view, skilled, educated, trained, what we believed were components, contributing factors to the psychology of that. But wouldn't it be awesome if, I don't know, we knew somebody that like has a background and is still kinky? So that's kind of why we brought Miss D on.
Thank you. I'm glad you did.
Never lacks for opinion.
yes, unaccustomed as I am to speaking my mind. Oh my God. I love.
So, just like off the cuff, do you just have any kind of generalized opinions you want to talk about before we kind of get into questions?
Sure. Let's talk about some general things about domination and submission. There is a phenomena where very dynamic, high-powered people, male and female, choose to live a submissive lifestyle. And part of that has to do with the fact that they are so responsible all day long. The buck stops at their desk. They have to make the decisions. They have to be, you know, the bad guy or whatever, you know, the person responsible. And it is so wonderful for many of them to be able to come home and put the scepter down, to not be in charge anymore for a little while anyway, and to have somebody else making the decisions, to just be able to do and be as directed. That can be very intoxicating for people who are hardcore dynamic, you know, A-type people in the everyday world. So it's very dangerous to think of submissives as weak because, in fact, they're not. Mm-mm. For me, I require strength and intelligence and independence and creativity and a sense of humor in my submissives because the surrender of all of that is just so darn delicious. I almost said a bad word.
You're allowed. You can say any bad word you want.
Well, it was fucking delicious. Okay. And so, when I find a good submissive or slave, oh my God, they're like platinum. Mm-hmm. Golden. Ugh. Be still my beating heart. And the dominant, it seems to me that the psychology of the dominant, well, now we get into quantitative things like good dominant, bad dominant, or lifestyle dominant versus aggressive man or woman hater who loves the option of being able to take out their issues under the guise of or under the umbrella of I get to do whatever the hell I want to you. Let's take a look at what I consider a responsible and authentic dominant. And that is someone who, yes, wants to be served. Yes, wants to be in charge. Yes, loves the idea of being pampered. But the trade-off is they choose to be responsible for another human being, and they take that responsibility very seriously. I was following a thread on some line or other, and I had written that I do expect my slaves or submissives to work outside of the home because I want them to have a retirement package. I want financial planning for them. I want them to be able to develop a savings. Nothing lasts forever, either the relationship or me. You know, neither of us are going to last forever. And should something change, to just say, you have to work outside and give me everything and have nothing to take care of those emergencies, illnesses, whatever, medical insurance, please God, medical insurance. I mean, I want my responsibility to include making sure that my slave or submissive is taken care of even after either our relationship is ended or I'm gone. That's the only kind of, that makes sense to me. Not to do that doesn't make sense to me. Now, if I am just with a submissive and it's not such a complete relationship where there's any financial issue at all, that doesn't become an issue. But if I've got someone who's with me full-time, absolutely into the power exchange master-slave relationship, then I definitely need to be sure that they are taking care of business for down the line. Those are some of the psychological traits that I feel are necessary or that rear their heads in a power exchange relationship. Now, problems arise when, in my opinion, these things can't be taught. If you have a slave or submissive heart, certainly you can be trained to the way I want you to do things. Certainly you can be trained in skills. You can learn how to cook. You can learn how to sew. You can learn what additional things I want you to be able to do for me. Those kinds of things can be taught. But unless you have a service heart, unless you have that mindset, I don't believe it can be taught. And I feel the same way about dominance. You really have to be willing to put on your big girl panties and take, or big boy panties, and take responsibility and not just reap the benefits. Mm. Being a dominant, let me be a bit of a sexist here.
By all means.
I mean, sometimes het male doms just become such easy targets.
Well, if they make it easy for them to be targets, is it really our fault?
They do. And I have met some really wonderful male doms and male masters, but you know, there's the guy that comes into the munch where it's just supposed to be vanilla and he's got seven floggers hanging from dear. His belt. And he introduces himself as Lord God of the Universe, Bruce.
Oh, wow.
And his first words to a submissive are, get on your knees and open your mouth.
Yeah.
Well, excuse me, you know, dominant is not another word for free blowjob.
Yeah.
Dominant is not another word for throwing your weight around or playing a bully. And part of the problem is in a het male dom, het sub female dynamic, it looks the closest to a regular vanilla kind of traditional relationship. And sometimes it takes a long time to discern some of those underlying agendas. Mm. And it's not always easy. I have to tell you, there are a lot of things in the world I could be. I could never be a female submissive. And I don't like to use the word never because the universe gets really pissed and goes, bzzz, we're going to get you. But I cannot imagine in this life, on this planet, you know, being who I am, ever being able to be a female submissive or slave. I love doing things for the people I love.
Mm-hmm.
I love the choice. And I love doing it in my own good time and whenever the hell I feel like it and not otherwise. I have such respect for female submissives because it scares the shit out of me what they have to go through and the risks they have to take in order to try and find a connection. And I keep wanting to protect them.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a good thing, because I love female submissives for myself, too.
Don't we all?
Yeah, I really am an equal opportunity bitch. Someone was saying, well, do you have a preference? I said, my preference is good service. The gender is irrelevant.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Did I answer your...
No, yeah, I mean, that was just kind of like volley. Your general thoughts. One of the things that in all of my research, when I'm looking at the psychology of these things, it always boils down to, in at least the psychological world, the reason people are attracted to these kinds of behaviors is because of some sort of damage that happened emotionally when somebody was young. You know, you're clearly, you know, I'm clearly a dominant female because I hate men. And that, you know, because I was abandoned by my father, blah, blah, blah. And that's clearly why. So if I deal with that issue, then I would stop being a dominant female, obviously, because it's because I'm psychologically fucked up. That's the only answer. And that it just never, rang true with me, because I don't have any proof, but my belief is dominance and submission is as you're bred into it as gay or straight. That's how I feel. So I'm just curious what your opinion is.
When I read that kind of a thing, my bullshit meter goes off, you know, the alarm sounds and the lights flash.
Yeah.
That's like saying that, that homosexuality is a disease. It's like saying that people who are left-handed are the spawn of the devil. I mean, you know.
Are they gingers too?
No, it's true. No. I mean, I was talking to someone the other day whose parents believed that they were less than their brothers and sisters because they happened to be left-handed.
Oh, my God.
Didn't exactly make them the spawn of the devil, but required them to learn to write with the right hand. Wouldn't let them function left-handed.
That was very common many, many years ago.
100 years ago, but I didn't expect it to be happening like 25 years ago.
That's insane.
You know, so there are... Again, you know, a lot of this stuff is, and we won't get into things like the defense of marriage, because it's only for heterosexuals, one man, one woman, and it's only for the procreation of children.
Which is insane, but...
You have no idea how, on a daily basis, I'm so glad I don't have kids. I've spent so much time trying to raise other people's or to undo the damage.
Ain't that the truth? So, I mean, but it boils down to, you know, somebody enjoys being beaten up because they're working through some abuse of their past. I mean, that seems like such bullshit. And, you know, I mean, yet I'm not saying, I know enough people and I've had enough conversations with people saying, yeah, they've had issues. And you have to be really careful around some of them. But I don't think it's got anything, I don't know. That's
well, fortunately, there have been more contemporary studies done, not nearly enough. But in the latest psychological studies, people involved in lifestyle BDSM are no more or less healthy or unhealthy than the general population, except in a few areas. People in lifestyle BDSM have a tendency to have a higher educational level. Mm. They tend to be more creative. They tend to be a bit more narcissistic. Go figure.
What?
But other than those three areas, I think there's one other area and I can't remember what it is, but other than those areas and them scoring and us scoring slightly higher in those fields, there are as many abused or not abused. There are as many crazy as not crazy. There are as many sociopaths as not sociopaths as the general population. There is no discernible difference between the people who practice BDSM and the people who practice, you know, serial monogamy. You know, 18 divorces and marriages to me is not necessarily a healthy attitude about marriage, even if it is heterosexual.
Yeah.
You know, that's, but we're not going to get into those kinds of judgments. And the other thing is, I think we have to be careful about saying things like enjoying having somebody beat the shit out of you. I mean, I use that phrase all the time because within our circle, everybody knows what that means.
Right.
But you need to take a look at the dynamic. Number one, the power exchange that happens between the ears is so critical. It may never involve impact play. It may never involve sex. There are all kinds of levels of BDSM power exchange relationships. And even if it does involve impact play and it does involve sexual intimacy, what's going on between your ears really has to be solid in order for the rest of that to be successful.
Absolutely.
If I tie you down and restrict you, and you know that you are now absolutely helpless in my presence, that's one element. I have really long fingernails. I'm not into rope. You know, I like chain. Click, click, you're down. but even chain I don't use very much, and I don't use rope very much. I love the idea of having you lie spread eagle on the bed and touching your wrist with my fingernail and getting really close to your ear and telling you that you have been pinned to the bed and you are not to move that wrist. And doing that on each arm and each ankle, because that requires you to be present and participating. To know that you choose to be helpless is even more intoxicating for me than tying you up. Now, I know that there are a lot of substance slaves who really get off on being tied down and being restrained. And so, I mean, that's a reward. You know, if you're really good to me, then I'll reward you and tie you down. I may cut the rope because I can't fuck around with those damn knots with my nails. But I don't necessarily want to send my submissives off onto another planet. I want them here with me. There are other ways of sending them to other planets, but most of the time, I really want our interactions to be mutually present. But that's how I function. That's not how everybody else functions.
No, I use a lot of mental bondage as well, because I once you've tied somebody up, you're limited. That's it. That's all they can do.
Unless I'm going to untie them
and flip them around. And, you know, I'm often a put your hands there. Don't move them.
You can't do the dishes if you're tied down.
Right?
It's another reason I don't get into things like puppy play or pony play. You know, if you're wearing those hoofs or those mitts, you're worthless to me. You know,
your service is
gone. You can't do any work. Yeah.
And this is kind of a question for both of you, you as a submissive and you as the psychological professional. What does a submissive get out of serving?
I was going to ask her to deconstruct that, actually.
Okay. Having already said that I couldn't be a female submissive doesn't mean, or any kind of, any gender submissive. All genders. Total equal opportunity. Okay. It has been related to me. Because I really want to know the people that I'm working with. I really want to know those I choose to allow into my home and into my heart. It's very important to me.
I agree.
I play differently in the dungeon. In the dungeon, at a play party, I can be just a teacher, just a mentor, just having playmates for the however long the scene goes. That's fine. What I do at home is very different. So, what I see in those with a service heart is that being given the opportunity to show their love and respect in a physically present, tangible way. And having the person they have done this for acknowledge what they have done, especially acknowledge it on a positive level, is like ice cream, Christmas, and sex all rolled into one. Now, you'd correct me if I'm wrong.
No, it's very different when you hear someone say, I love you, you're very important to me, but you're right. You know, you present something that is there. You can touch it. You can see it. You can feel the benefits of, you can feel the benefits of your clean kitchen. You can walk in and it's sparkling. The counters are clear. The dishes are put away. You can see that.
You have to clone her.
If I could, and I would charge a lot.
You'd be very wealthy. You'd be very wealthy.
And so there's, you know, presenting that and then getting that sparkle in your eye, that relief that you don't have to do that because I already did it.
Yay.
And when I have seen my kitchen and I turn and look at you, there is no doubt in your mind about the look in my eye and the joy in my heart. And I will reinforce that because I have no problem saying, good girl, you have just made me very happy. And that is like a paycheck. Mm-hmm. That's the paycheck.
Yeah.
I wish I could save up all of my little like good girls and like in a little piggy bank, just save them all up and just hoard them. So like on a bad day, just pop all of my good girls.
You only get the good girls when you are being a good girl, though.
I do. But I'm saying that that's how good they make me feel, though, is that it just makes you feel like you're wrapped in a warm blanket and everything's great and you're the best submissive ever.
In the same way that it's also an interesting paradox that there is an awful lot of power in being a submissive. For example, it is not a secret that I love foot massages. I mean, everybody in the world, in our world, knows.
Oh, yeah.
If I spend time playing with you or beating you, and we'll get to that beating part again because I didn't get to it. When we finish, you're going to be rubbing my feet. Now, two things occur. First of all, to look up from the floor where you are rubbing my feet and seeing the beatific smile on my face that you have created really does give the submissive or the slave a sense of power. They know they created that.
Absolutely.
And they are strong and powerful for being able to do that. They don't verbalize that to us. They don't want us to know that they have this power thing of their own. But it is a very powerful thing. And when they have done something that has impacted how we feel, that's also a kind of power. Even though it looks like they have only been slaves and have only served. In the same way that when I spend an hour beating the shit out of somebody, and we will get back to that, it doesn't look like I'm in charge if I'm the one who needs chiropractic intervention the next day because I spent so much time and energy giving you what you wanted and creating giggles and sighs and wonderful sounds out of you for an hour that night. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's very easy for the image to get blurred. Now, in reality, even if I am flogging you or using a single tail on you or paddling you or spanking you or caning you, not you.
No.
The general you. It is measured. It is calibrated. It is consciously learned how to do well and safely. So when we say things cavalierly like beating the shit out of you, yes, I mean, we say that because we know what the parameters are. But other people hear it, and then they write those stupid psychological books that say we are man-haters or woman-haters yeah. or twisted or bent or damaged.
Sociopaths.
Goods. Yeah. And so sometimes when I'm speaking to people not in the lifestyle, I try and measure how I say it, even though it's so much fun saying to people who know, oh, my God, she beat the shit out. I beat the shit out of him all night long. I have to be careful about being too cavalier in the arenas in which I say something like that because it's very easy for it to be misinterpreted. I don't beat the shit out of anybody. Most of the people I play with are still full of shit.
Usually one beating doesn't take care of that.
No.
It's a lifetime thing.
Yeah, really.
Oh, man.
Does that answer?
Yeah, no. Okay. Wonderful.
What insight would you be able to give us on someone who has these kinky interests and has not fully accepted that they have this internal conflict?
Like a good person doesn't do this.
Yes.
Oh, honey, there are so many of those judgments in our lives. Nice girls don't fuck.
Oh, yeah. I'm 40. I still struggle with a good girl doesn't do that. And fuck, I haven't been a good girl in a really long goddamn time. So it's an internal track that just plays.
Of course.
You know?
And if you're not married by the time you're 23, you're an old maid.
Oh, yeah. Nobody'll ever want you.
Right. If you aren't making $100,000 a year, you're not really a man.
Yep.
You're not providing for the people who love you.
God forbid your penis be under 6 inches or 7 inches or 8 inches.
I don't know where this size thing came from. First of all, according to my studies, the vagina is only about 5 inches long.
Yeah, mine's longer.
Maybe, all right, so maybe 6. It's not 12 fucking inches long.
Mine is actually 8 inches, and I know that.
Okay, fine. All right.
But yeah, average one, you're right, is about 5 inches.
Yeah, let's say between 5 and 7 average. Anything beyond that is either going to be hurting the hell out of me or you're going to be hanging outside. There's just no room for you. So why there's this big push for everybody to be 10, 12 inches long, it just cracks me up. It's what a waste. What a waste of size. You know, and for me,
have shared it a little bit.
And for me, I don't care how long you are. I happen to like a fullness in
amen.
In the penis because I like to feel it along the sides, even though technically all of the nerve endings are right at the opening of the vagina. The walls of the vagina don't have as much sensation as right there at the opening of the vagina. But I like having the whole area engaged. So having a really thin penis is not optimal to me. But the reality is there are about 72 different ways of getting me off that have nothing to do with being inside of me.
Amen.
And if you've got me coming all night long and you've never been inside of me the whole time and I'm still a happy camper grinning from ear to ear and hanging from the ceiling by my fingernails, you did your job. You did just fine. Thank you very much.
That completely, I'm sorry, but I would take a man that knows how to give a woman an orgasm over a man with a huge cock any day of the week.
Oh,
because
God,
I'll tell
yes.
you, the huge cock is great. And yeah, you've got that wow. And now my cervix is killing me. That's awesome. And I'm going to go use my Hitachi now because I still haven't had an orgasm. You know, and that sucks. That's like bullshit. Whereas, okay, so, you know, my cervix is fine and completely undamaged because there was nothing there. But I've had, you know, 10 orgasms. So I'm happy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yummy.
I can't relate to that thing.
You've had heterosex.
I have had heterosex, but I mean, it's just, I can't relate to what you just said. I just can't.
But can you relate to the fact that you don't care how it happens? As long as you're coming all night long, you're a happy camper?
Yes. Please, make me come all night.
The other issue.
You're going to regret that.
Oh, shit.
All right. When I was growing up, you didn't die from having sex. So there were a whole lot of different attitudes about cavalierly, casually fucking around. And there was a lot of that. Not so much after everybody started dying.
I mean, really.
Yeah. I want to live to be 127. I figure I'll be rowdy until I'm about 120, and then I'll just do the talk show circuit the last few years.
Totally. And
I could lie through my teeth, because who'd be around to dispute me?
I like this.
And then my friends say, you know, even if you told the truth, they wouldn't believe you anyway, so what does it matter? So because I want to live a long time, I am very, very careful and very, very particular. And, you know, I also, in my advanced years on the planet, I also know that I love my Hitachi, and I love coming in my Panasonic or what, I don't even remember what the hell I have. Or how many of them. I've got some favorites, too. We can get into that on a different show. But the reality is, it might just as well be me alone with my Hitachi, unless I have a chosen connection with you.
Absolutely.
Doesn't mean I want to marry you. It doesn't mean I have to marry you. It doesn't mean we have to move in together. It just means that unless I am engaged in wanting an interaction with you beyond just getting fucked, then I might just as well stay at home and use my Hitachi. I don't have to get dressed. I can stay naked. You know, I can hang out.
I don't have to shave.
Yeah, really. And I don't have to wear makeup. None of that stuff. So I, for me, and I know during the sexual freedom movement, when we were fucking everything in the world, we didn't pay any attention to that kind of thing. It really does make a difference for me. And I don't know whether it's just because I'm an old fart or whether it's because the quality is much more important to me than the quantity. But that's a critical factor for me.
Absolutely. I agree. I had my sledding past, and even now I'm like, I guess I'm single again. I guess I can go out sledding again.
And sledding present.
I'm a sledding present. And it's just like, you know, be like, no, I don't really want to have sex with you. I don't have any interest in you. And that's weird, because before I'd be like, yeah, let's grab a condom. You know, it's just a different, and you're right. It's about when that a connection makes a difference. And I think that is the same when you're doing like BDSM. Like for when I'm playing with somebody, if it's just a pickup scene at a dungeon, I don't care about them. They don't care about me. We got nothing going on. You know, they probably care about me a little bit more than I care about them, because, you know, they obviously asked me to play. And I'm like, cool. And I'm completely service topping, because I don't know you. There's no power exchange.
No investment.
I'm not invested. Yeah. And so it's not as fun. Whereas when I do a scene with Nancy, I'm invested. I'm majorly invested, and she doesn't know what I'm going to do. She never knows what I'm going to do, because I don't have to get her permission. I don't have to make sure that we negotiate it and that she's okay. I know what her limits are. I'm cool with that. And so for me, that is always a far more enjoyable experience. I have that. There's that connection, not just of the mind, but of the heart. And it makes it all the more satisfying.
And you know what? Because that connection is there, if nothing happens except you're sitting on the couch next to each other and she has her head on your knee and you just spend a couple of hours at night that way, it can be more intimate than you fucking somebody else all night long.
Absolutely.
And it just got wet.
Oh, honey. Oh, those connected moments are just priceless. Mm-hmm. They are so delicious. And God bless the people who are connected to each other, who have acknowledged those samenesses in each other that helps feed what they each need.
Yeah.
And yum.
Well, I have another question.
Go for it.
In regards to sadism, you know, when someone feels that they have very dark desires, and they feel like, well, what's wrong with me that I want to do this horrible thing to someone? How do you reconcile that with, you know, being...
With being a nice person?
Yeah.
Being a good person.
You know, it's so funny. When I first started getting into this, in the dictionary next to the word paranoia, my picture was there twice. Because I was involved in so many things going on in the world that would have blown up in my face had people known what my alternative lifestyle was or how I wanted to spend my recreational time. And if you had 100 people in the room and you walked in and someone came up to you and told you that one of the women in this room is a ball-busting bitch, and you took a ballot 6 times, my name wouldn't be on the ballot at all. Because people in that element of my life knew nothing about this and would never have perceived me as, you know, like beating the shit out of people perception is a misperception. Ball-busting bitch is also a misperception. In my world, that's a compliment. You know? So, in my vanilla life, before I had embraced BDSM, I did go through those. How can you want that? Or God, thank God that these fantasies that I'm having while I'm masturbating, nobody else knows about. And I'm hoping God's looking the other way too, you know, because otherwise I'm going to be going to hell for sure. So the joy and the freedom of walking into a community that embraced that, that praised that about me, was just incredible. And what made it work is when people who wanted to be on the receiving end convinced me of what a gift I was giving them by allowing them to experience these extreme sensations and these extreme restrictions and these extreme situations, because it fed them. And so it gave my sadism some, permission.
Mm-hmm.
It validated the fact that it wasn't such a horrible, rotten thing. And there is a happy sadist in me. I have to own her. You know, she has a lot of fun. And I love coming in contact with people who want to have their boundaries pushed,
yeah,
who want to have their borders erased, and who say to me, and now here's another one that's wonderful. And as a therapist, I can relate to that. And because it's in the dungeon and I'm sometimes service topping in the dungeon, someone I know, someone dear to me, someone I care about says, I really need to go farther than I have. I have so much shit I need to clean out. I need an emotional laxative. Please, I swear, if I think I'm in trouble, I will use my safe word. But if you don't hear it, please don't stop. Please don't back off. I need you to push me. Would you do that for me? Oh, my God. Be still my heart.
Oh. You know what's worse is when you do that and then they're lipos out. It's like, fuck. I'm so looking forward to that.
Well, you know, that's okay too, but it feeds a part of me, so it doesn't feel like it's a one-sided giving. The giving, the service end of this is that the service is a loop.
Yeah.
From top to bottom, from master to slave, from dom to submissive. It is a loop, and we feed and nourish each other by giving and needing and taking and giving and needing and taking in that loop. Yummy. Ooh.
I mean, for me, it seems that kind of loop, that kind of combination, the yin and yang, as I often refer to, the submissive and the dominant in any relationship, it seems to me that that creates a more whole and a more healthy relationship than most vanilla relationships.
Well, now we can get into the psychology of the difference between vanilla and BDSM relationships. And a lot of the reasons for those differences are very practical. Number one, and there are three really specific reasons why I embrace BDSM. Number one, there is no should I, shouldn't I, will I, won't I. We start out saying, these are my cards. Let me see your cards, and let's see if we can play this game. We know from the gate. We've got it laid out. And no, it doesn't take the romance out of things. Okay. Number two, it's based in trust. We start out where some married couples don't get to for 5, 10, 15 years.
Forever.
Well, all right, I'm trying to be kind.
I'm not. I know a lot of married people.
Okay. So, you know, and the minute you start to distrust what's going on, we renegotiate. We talk about it again. We get it cleared. We are working very hard at openness, honesty, transparency. When it's a healthy power exchange relationship, it is something that we have chosen to consciously work at on a consistent basis. Not now that we're married, I can gain my 50 pounds and you can go play with your secretary and yeah, bullshit. I don't want any of that ever. And number three, it's a win-win situation. I love having my feet rubbed. You love rubbing my feet. Everybody gets what they want. Yay! I love it. I love win-win.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that, for me, again, in the DS world, it's less about blame and labels. And when you get into, you know, a vanilla relationship that starts to go bad, blame and labels comes right in. And it's about good, bad, you know, whatever, cheater, bitch, asshole, all of that. Whereas if you're in, you know, one of those DS relationships that you laid all your cards out at the table, you negotiate everything, you have this openness, I demand openness from my submissive. I give openness even though it is not demanded, because that's what's proper in a relationship. So when things start to go wrong, instead of just saying, oh my God, well, you're an awful sub and this isn't going to work, you know, it's a discussion. What's going on? What's happening? What are we doing? And you continue to have that dialogue all the time, because we're not like throwing these labels and putting everybody in the black pot or a white pot or, you know, whatever. And I think that is one of the differences. And if more generic vanilla couples like just adopted that stance, there would have happier relationships and probably wouldn't be with the people they're with.
I teach a workshop called How to Say Goodbye Without Becoming Toxic.
Mm.
Just because, especially if there's been an investment of time and energy in a relationship, it should not have to become adversarial. It should not have to become cutthroat. It shouldn't have to be killing and destructive. And there are ways of getting around that, and there are ways of being able to say goodbye or change administrations or change bosses or change job descriptions or whatever the situation happens to be without having it implode. There are tools that I try and give people to learn how to have those changes occur without having it get really ugly. And I would love anyone who needs to go through those kinds of changes and those kinds of endings to be able to have those endings amicable, because there's no reason why they can't be. No reason why.
Yeah.
I like that.
And what was the other thing I was going to say? I cross my fingers when I have to remember.
There was
I remember what it is. As much as I love having my feet rubbed, if I found out that you were only doing it out of a sense of obligation and just because I asked you to, but you hated it, I would never let you touch my feet. Because if joy isn't coming through your hands into my feet, I'm getting shit out of your hands. Mm-hmm. And I don't want you to touch me. I want to know, in that win-win situation that we were talking about, that you really love doing it and that you want to do it whether or not I ask you to.
Yeah.
That's important to me. Those kinds, that's what I mean by service heart. That's when it really becomes important to know that you are doing where you are by choice and not by, you know, there's no other option for you and you have no choice and you're just being nice to me because you need some place to be tonight. You know, yuck.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the same way when I'm topping anybody. If I have to feel positive about that person, or at least not negative. I mean, if it's somebody I don't really know, but if I get like negative energy or a negative vibe from them, I don't want to touch them. I just can't do it. That's really important because even if I'm getting a foot rub or I'm, you know, flogging somebody or whatever, I'm putting myself into that, whether I'm receiving the service or I'm giving something, I'm putting myself into that.
Yeah. That's part of the loop that we were talking about.
Right. So I don't want to get back, you know, sludge. I want it to be nice, whatever I'm getting back. It's obviously not exactly what I'm putting in because it's from somebody else. And the concept that, you know, 1 + 1 is, you know, the sum of the parts is greater than you know, the sum of the whole, total of the whole. What's the expression?
I don't even know.
No?
I don't know that expression.
The whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
Thank you. That's it. See? I knew there was a sum of the parts going on.
Some of the time and all of the time and all of the people. Never mind.
Yes. 4 score and 7 what? Oh no, I'm tired. I drank a lot of tequila last night. I don't know what to say about that.
Any other questions?
I guess when it goes bad, and I know for me, when I've had situations with submissives that's gone bad, my first thing is, I'm just a shitty fucking dominant. That's it. Because that wouldn't have happened if I was a better dominant.
And I never go there.
I enjoy myself effacing ways. It's not just me. I know other people that have done the same thing. They go there.
Some of you have smaller egos.
I choose humility. It's just one of my paths. How tips for people, and if it's a submissive, if something goes wrong, I'm a shitty submissive, tips for them for kind of getting over not shutting the door entirely on kink because they believe that they're not good at it.
You mean keeping things in perspective?
Yeah, that's
okay. Before anyone gets involved in any kind of a lifestyle, whether it's race car driving or, you know, downhill skiing or whatever it, or you know, becoming a nun, whatever it is, no, you really have to know the person who's looking back at you through that mirror. If you don't know the person in the mirror, you are in deep shit because your choices are going to be based on insufficient data and the speed with which you become self-judgmental and self-critical and self-deprecating can become debilitating in the long run. So if you are on good terms with the chick in the mirror and you know that her intentions are good, her motivations are based in a positive way, her desire is for it win-win and for it to be good for everybody, when there's an oops, when there's a mistake, when there's a crash and burn, you can focus on what happened in the situation as opposed to which individual fucked up. You make it situational instead of personal. Now, it may ultimately have to come to a personal basis. You may look at yourself in the mirror and say, you backslid. You promised yourself you weren't going to do that, and you chose to be dishonest with that person and with yourself, and that's why it got screwed. That may be the assessment, but to immediately go, it's all your fault, is not fair. Because if you know the chick in the mirror and you know that her intentions are basically honorable, then the oops was not intentional and is something that can be repaired. It's not endemic to the relationship. It is something that is correctable. Now, if I have really long fingernails and I can't untie the rope and I don't have my scissors, then I'd better not tie you up, because if there's an emergency, I can't get you out of it. If I, knowing I don't have scissors, knowing I can't get the knots undone, if I choose to tie you up anyway, and I throw caution to the winds, and I don't pay attention to the safety factors, then I have to blame the chick in the mirror because I consciously chose to go to a bad place. I consciously chose to take risks that were not necessary. But barring those kinds of things, you need to look at the situation and not necessarily be quick to blame either the other person or yourself. I have had submissives who were very introspective and very, I want to improve. I'm not good enough. It was my fault. And I'm going, you got to stop beating yourself up. First of all, that's my job. And you're taking my job away from me. It's not fair. You know, when you need correction, I'll be happy to point it out to you. But in the meantime, please understand that we are all just works in progress. I don't know anybody who's perfect. I don't know anybody who's already arrived at all the places they want to be at. When I was about 8 years old, someone said, if you had one wish, what would it be? And I said, I want to know everything about everything. I mean, I was pretty precocious at eight. The reality is that now in my advanced old age, I want to know the last piece of the puzzle about 10 minutes before I die. I figure I could handle knowing it all, knowing everything about everything for about 10 minutes before I got bored, and then I'd be ready to die. But I love the fact that getting up every morning, there are a million things I haven't done, a million things I don't know. There are so many options and possibilities, not only for being able to repeat good stuff, but for getting to learn new stuff. It's fabulous to be able to get up in the morning. If you knew it all, why bother? You know, if you'd done it all and you knew it all, why bother?
That's true.
Yeah.
I have nothing to add to that.
Me neither.
Love that.
She shut us up.
Wow. As she should.
As she should. Yes.
It's what she does. She's the shutter upper.
Oh, stop.
We're running out of time.
Have we already killed an hour?
Thank you. It doesn't even feel like...
I could sit and just talk to her forever.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, the philosophy, the approach, it so resonates with everything that I believe, and I just love that, because it's like, yes, I feel like I'm smart because I hear it coming from somebody else. So, it's like validation.
Yay!
Wanted to thank Ms. D.
Thank
for coming
you.
On. I'm sure we will have her on again.
Thank you.
Thank Nancy for, sitting there.
What?
She's so cute.
Stop it.
I'm Insidious Muse.
And I'm obviously Service Slut.
Yes, you are. Like her Facebook page, which is, oddly enough called The Love Bite.
Yeah, turns out.
On the Twitter, @the_love_bite. Review us on iTunes.
Because we like those. Oh my God, they make.
We really do. I get it. A lot of you guys, it's your vanilla name and you don't want to, but whatever. Just it boosts us. Hit us up on Twitter if you've got questions, needs, wants.
And on FET. So, a listener in the UK sent me a message on FET that they really liked what we were doing. And so that's always nice, just to know that someone else is listening and they're like, hey, this is awesome.
I know, right? I've gotten a couple of Australia and Canada, and they're all English speaking countries, which is fine because we oddly enough broadcast in English. So that seems to work out for everybody there.
Tough otherwise.
And we have things that are coming up, and they're people, and the things we will talk about, and they will all be kinky. So that's all I can say about that. No idea. Have a good week.